Welcome to the Extra Mile Podcast Experiment. In this experiment, we investigate the Galloway run-walk-run training method to determine the advantages and disadvantages of using this approach to train for a full marathon. Please follow this experiment in this podcast as well as on our own website at www.theextramilepodcast.com and consider becoming an active member in your own marathon this fall.
Welcome to episode 2 of the Extra Mile Podcast Experiment. This is Kevin, and I'm out today on my noontime run. Another beautiful day here in Cincinnati. And before I get started, maybe an announcement, huh? I just got a brilliant idea for a new segment of the show that I'm going to be calling Kevin Discusses Topics Which He Knows Nothing About. I'm expecting that this part of the show will grow by leaps and bounds and eventually, because of demand, have to be spun off into its own podcast. I think this is a perfect idea for a podcast for a few reasons. First, there is an unending supply of topics that Kevin knows nothing about. So it would never be hard to come up with a show topic. Also, I'm thinking that chances are good listening to me talk about something I know nothing about is something you're all used to doing anyway. So it's not a very huge leap of faith to ask you to start subscribing to this other podcast. Today's topic that I'll be discussing, of which I know nothing about, is picking a personal trainer. Today, as I walked into my gym, I had to walk through the workout area to get to the locker room. As I did, I noticed one of these muscular personal trainers with his client down on the floor, sweating profusely, trying to perform some push-ups. Now, while this guy's on the floor, the personal trainer standing above him, his lips are moving, so I'm assuming he's giving some sort of advice, coaching, motivation, whatever. But he's also got his cell phone out, texting. So today's words of wisdom on how to pick a personal trainer are: if your personal trainer is ever texting while you're doing a workout, it's time to pick a new personal trainer. Good stuff, huh? I'll let you know if I ever spin this topic off to its own podcast. So let's get back to the Extra Mile Podcast Experiment. Welcome to episode 2. I have gotten what I can only call a surprising response to this experiment. I have gotten an unbelievable amount of emails, audio submissions, phone calls. It's just going over really well, which makes me very happy because it's good to know that an idea that I thought would go over really is going over pretty well. And I'd like to thank everybody who's following along, and especially those who are doing their due diligence. My little guinea pigs, I call them. I mean that in a loving way, by the way. Please keep the submissions and feedback coming. So, what can you expect from episode number 2 of this podcast? Well, you're going to hear some of those submissions from your fellow guinea pigs in today's episode. There's going to be another very interesting interview with our buddy Jeff Galloway, where we're going to get a lot deeper into this Galloway run, walk, run method. And at the end, you'll hear Jeff answer some questions submitted by your fellow guinea pigs. Good stuff. Finally, we will finish with some homework. Yeah, so stick around. No excuses for missing your homework. And we'll chat again at the end. Enjoy your extra mile.
Hey there, everyone. This is the Zen Runner, and I'm just phoning in to congratulate Kevin for his amazing adventure into the Extra Mile podcast experiment. I think it's a great idea. As you know, he's hooking up with Jeff Galloway, the famous Run, Walk, Run Galloway. And, you know, I've always considered this to be my method anyway. I didn't need Jeff to tell me. I'd always take breaks when I needed them, but I never did it with such structure, with such format, with such a community. So basically what I'm doing, you know, out of sort of this inspiration, I went out and I purchased myself a Gym Boss. And I think if you just Google Gym Boss, G-Y-M-B-O-S-S, you can find out what that is. It's this teeny little device. It cost me about $20, but it is fantastic. It's like a little watch, and maybe you guys have talked about this already, but it's a simple, simple thing. All you can do with it is set two separate countdown times, interval times, and to anything, anywhere from, like, I don't know, 99 minutes, I think, or something. But really, it's a very simple device, just about the size of a matchbox, you know, and you clip it. There's a clip on it onto your belt or onto your sleeve or wherever you want to put it. I've been moving it around. I put it on my collarbone for a while. It's fun. You can even hold it. And you can either have it beep or buzz. But I have it set right now for 4 minutes and 1 minute. So actually, the reverse. I have the 1 minute first, so I'll walk out for 1 minute. It buzzes me, and then I start to run for 4 minutes, then it buzzes me, and then I walk. And it's great, just like that. You hear that little beep? It's my email, but you know what I mean. It's great. It's kind of, it's like somebody tugging on you, on your shirt, saying, slow down. And it always catches me at, like, the weirdest time, like when I don't expect it, I get buzzed. I'm like, huh, what? Oh, yeah, like, okay, start to walk. But, I've done this now twice, that overall my pace is faster. I'm running faster in the end. I was running 10-minute and sub-10-minute 4-minute shots, which is fast for me after like 4 or 5 miles, you know, and when you add it up, even though you're doing a whole lot of walking, the overall distance, the average pace is quicker, and it's hard. And the other thing is, it's hard to believe. And the other thing that kind of blows my mind is that overall, you find yourself out further faster. What do I mean by that? Well, at the halfway point, I was like, wow, I can't believe I'm already here, you know, because you're taking so many breaks. By the time you get there, you're not nearly as winded and tired. So you end up going a little bit further. I'm like, oh, you know what, I'll do it another interval, you know, by slicing it up. It's like the potato chip, right? The Jeff Galloway interval potato chip theory, or maybe it's the Zen Runner potato chip theory. You just can't eat one, right? You just keep going. You know what I mean. Either way, it works. It's cool. Thanks for setting it up. I'll be playing with the experiment. I'll be using it to train for the Worldwide Festival of Races in October. I'm not really sure when my next big race will be after this weekend. I'm running the Naples Philharmonic 10K, Run for Music 10K, at runformusic10k.com in Naples, and then I'll decide where I want to go. It's starting to get hot here, so you see fewer races down here. I'll have to travel to the hinterlands of the north and come visit you and have a run. So that's it. That's the word from the swamps in Southwest Florida. Thanks, everybody, and we'll talk to you later. Bye.
Hi, this is Dave Salzer. Just picked up your podcast here, The Extra Mile. A couple days ago, noticed you were talking about the Galloway method of running, I have to say, I started training for a fall marathon in 2009 in April, and I started out running just as much as I could without walk breaks. Had somewhat of an injury, got out to 13.1 without using the Galloway program, and laid off for 3 months, actually 3 weeks. And I picked up Jeff's book during that rest time, and I looked it over and I said, why not give it a shot, you know? I really want to do this. Ran 13.1 without a walk break, and, you know, beat me up pretty bad. So I started out 2-1s, felt good, kept a nice steady pace for a month there, just pretty much going line by line. And then I went 3-1s, felt real comfortable doing the 3-1 walk ratio, just built on that. And in December 13th, 2009, I completed that marathon. You know, a lot of people say, well, oh, that's walk breaks. That's not being very macho. You know, everybody's ego gets in the way. But hey, if you're out there enjoying yourself, you know, who cares what other people think? We're out here to have fun, right? We're out here to do something that basically we never thought we could do before, and we do it. And if that won't bring a smile upon your face, nothing will. Kind of build on that. Yeah, I ran this 2010 here in Oral Valley, Arizona, over the Oral Valley Distance Classic. I ran a half marathon doing the Galloway program. I've been injury-free since April of 2009. Set a PR. I knocked 4 minutes and 24 seconds off of my last half marathon PR, you know, so that's amazing to me. You know, I'm a slow runner, 207. One more thing is, you know, that last half of that marathon, or that half marathon here in Oral Valley, 37 seconds faster, the last 6 miles. So if that doesn't tell you that that Galloway method can work, I just don't know what is. I've now been inspired listening to different podcasts, Dirt Dog, 50K. He's running a lot of these ultras. And, you know, I think I'm going for an ultra, you know. I'm going to start out with a 50K, you know, trail ultra. Some people call it some ultra, some people won't. I'm going to give it a shot, you know, real slow, using a walk run. And keep up my training, you know, look again December 11th or 12th here in Tucson, doing the Tucson Marathon again. See if I can't improve that time a little bit. First marathon was a 4:50. Hey, maybe I get down to a 4:30. Hey, maybe I run a 4:50. But the important thing is, let's have fun. Hey, thanks. Love your thought podcast. Have a good run. See ya.
Hi, Kevin. This is Larry in Connecticut. I'm a new listener. Just started listening in January. Love the podcast. I'm also a newer runner, been running for about 2.5 years. During that first year, did many 5Ks and never got hurt. But then I did 2 halves and 1 full marathon, and during either the race or training, in all of them, I got some type of injury. So I'd like to do another marathon this fall, but of course don't want to go through the injuries again. So I was interested in the Galloway method anyway, so I got very excited about your experiment. Listened to episode 1 of the interview with Jeff and thought it was great, And personally, I can't wait to give it a try myself. So keep up the great work, and hopefully we both can stay injury-free. So thanks a lot. Take care.
Well, welcome back to the Extra Mile Podcast Experiment, episode number 2. And with us on the phone again, we have our buddy Jeff Galloway. Hi, Jeff. How you doing today?
Great to be here, Kevin.
You're back in Atlanta, I see, for a couple of days. That's what you said.
Absolutely.
The last time we spoke, I think about 3 weeks ago, you had just finished the Atlanta ING Marathon.
Yes.
Done anything since, or what's the next one?
Well, no. Headed for the Big Sur Marathon next week.
Oh, nice.
And actually, the ING Georgia Marathon was very conveniently placed between breast cancer and the Big Sur. So it was our training run for Big Sur.
Awesome. I've seen pictures of that, and that just looks like an amazing run.
Well, I've run, I don't know how many different courses. I have now done about, I guess it's 154 marathons, but I hadn't seen any course that's as beautiful as the Big Sur course. There are some that are very, very nice and beautiful in their own way, but that spectacular coastline, looking
right
down and seeing all the wildlife and everything, it's really a very special thing, and I recommend that to be on people's to-do list.
Oh, great. That's funny you say that, because here, Dan, I'm going to ask you about recommending some marathons for us, but we'll get to that in a minute. I got to tell you, when you agreed to do this with me, and I sat down and tried to think of some questions to ask or what direction we wanted to go, there were some questions I came up with that I got to tell you had little or nothing to do with this experiment itself. But there were things that I just was dying to know about you and your running, and along the way, after reading several of your books, I have had some of these, I don't know, epiphanies or kind of aha moments. So I'm going to be selfish, if it's okay, in some of these, and just ask a couple questions every now and then,
right,
if I could.
Anything you want to, that's fine with me. I love talking about it.
I've heard a couple of interviews where interviewers have said things like, Jeff, it must be pretty cool to be thought of as the inventor of something like walking. And I had an aha moment last time you and I spoke, in that you had mentioned that you said something to the effect that the runner owed it to the author of the method to read everything about it and do their due diligence and really, you know, dive into it and do it the way it was written. So from that perspective, obviously you did not invent walking, but this whole run, walk, run method is way more than just, hey, go out and for a long run and walk every now and then. There are so many different components, and you absolutely have authored that piece of it.
Well, I never claim to have invented walking or even the insertion of walk breaks into running training. However, what my contribution has been to make a method out of it, to directly attach up to the pace that people are running, the amount of walking, when to place it, how often, and so forth.
I'm dying to know how that started. What's the genesis? You just out running one day and decided you were tired and took a walk and it hit you? Or what's the genesis of this?
No, it was, I had just opened my store, Fidipides, back in 1973, and a person came in who was a director of a community outreach program for a major university, offering just lifestyle courses, and asked if I wanted to teach a course in beginning running. So I thought, this could bring customers in the store, so sure, I want to do that. Well, we had 22 that signed up the first time out, and none of them had done any running for at least 5 years. So this was truly a beginning group in every way, and I knew that we were going to do a good bit of walking through the program, and sure enough, we did. There was one group that was what they called a so-called basket case group of runners. They had never done any regular exercise in their lives. The second group at the other end of the spectrum was a group of young guys that had done other sports and were in quite good shape, but had not really done any running per se, any distance running at all on a regular basis. Third group was in the middle. So right from the get-go, I inserted walk breaks for every group. The basket case folks did mostly walking, but with some running insertions. By the end of the 10-week class, every one of the members finished either a 5 or a 10K. But the biggest thing for me was that there were no injuries. In other words, I had worked with a lot of groups and run with a lot of groups over the years, even as of that point. And I had never seen a group of 20 or more people in 10 weeks that had no injuries. And at the time, even then, I realized that the walk breaks were probably the major reasons why there were no injuries. I've fine-tuned the method ever since, but that was where it started.
That's pretty cool. I have some other epiphany or aha moments that I'd like to get to eventually as this thing goes along. But let's get into the Extra Mile Podcast experiment. The last time we spoke, we got what I'd call the Reader's Digest version of the Run, Walk, Run. We asked listeners to go and digest everything they could, either from your website, you recommended the book, your training programs book. I've spoken to several people who have absolutely bought that book and also the video you were talking about before. In our last one, rave reviews about the video, by the way.
Thank you.
A lot of people that want to see what's going on versus just read the printed page, and it works out really well.
Well, we are a visible society.
Absolutely, absolutely. So hopefully we've all got a pretty good idea of the basic parts of this program, the long runs with the walk breaks, the magic mile, et cetera. So I guess the next natural question, if I'm a reader and dove into this thing, would be how do I pick a schedule?
Okay. The first issue is past history. And if someone has really not been doing any regular exercise, they should go to a beginning schedule. If someone has done regular exercise for at least 6 months, they could shoot for what's called a two-finish schedule if it's their first event, first marathon. Now, there isn't a whole lot of difference between those two schedules, but there is a little bit. So It's always better to err on the side of being a little more conservative. The bottom line is that there isn't any speed work in either the beginner or the two-finish schedule. Now, those that have run marathons before and want to improve their time can select a time goal schedule. The specific time goal, then, would be based on the magic mile. That is also what we use even for the beginners to determine what is a safe pace for the long run, knowing that most of the injuries that I see, not only from our programs but from all programs in training for a marathon, occur due to going too fast on the long runs. I've devised this magic mile time trial that I started using about 16 years ago now to predict what somebody could run in a marathon. Then we add 2 minutes per mile to that. For example, let's say that after two or three of the magic miles, your time is 10 minutes flat. Well, I found that most people slow down 30% when they go from a fast 1 mile to a fast per mile pace in a marathon. So what we do is we multiply 10 minutes by 1.3 and come up with 13 minutes per mile. That would be an all-out marathon pace for that person currently, assuming that they did all the training and had an ideal day.
Right.
But to be safe, for a long run, we add 2 minutes to that 13-minute pace, and that person then should be running at 15 minutes per mile. The same process goes for time goal people in selecting not only the long run pace, but their time goal. Now, with time goal folks, we allow them what I call a leap of faith projection.
Okay.
And what that means is that at the beginning of the program, you hadn't done any speed work, you haven't done any long runs, so you've got to assume, hopefully, that you're going to improve during the training. The question is how much. I, after my 250,000 folks I've worked with, have noticed and tabulated that most people don't improve more than about 5%. I round that off to about 30 seconds per mile as being the maximum that I like for my e-coach clients or people that I work with to shoot for. So taking that leap of faith goal from someone that, say, is predicting a 13-minute per mile means that 12:30 would be the fastest that they should be shooting for that particular season. That allows you to set up the speed work times and, of course, as I mentioned, the long run pace.
Great. And all the stuff you just went over is detailed in excruciating detail in the training programs book.
That's right. Galloway Training Programs, it has all of the latest stuff, including the latest run-walk-run ratios.
I noticed that in, I think, every one of your schedules, at least the two finish and the beginner schedules, the schedules call for 3 running days a week. Now, the audience that I think is listening loves to run. And I know the last time we spoke, you said you ran 6 days a week. So it must be okay to run more than 3 days a week.
Well, in most cases, yes. What I offer with my programs is the bare minimum necessary to get you to the goal. And I know from having worked now with so many tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people over the years, that 3 days a week is all that is necessary in terms of frequency. But it is true that a lot of folks like myself don't feel as good if we don't run more than 3 days a week. So as long as you're not pushing yourself into fatigue, it's fine to run more than 3 days a week. But I have numerous thousands of cases now over the years in which people have improved their time when they drop down to 3 days a week. And that's particularly true for those that are over the age of 45.
Oh, that's interesting. Like I said before, there are so many components to the method that you just have to dive into this training programs book to get anything out of. But I don't know whether it's fair to say, but it's not the most important. One of the most important has got to be the long run. So I had a couple of questions specific to the long run.
Shoot.
How long should our long runs be before we start inserting walk breaks?
Well, not only in our programs, but in a lot of other programs, the main observation in training really is oriented around the wall. The wall is that thing you want to avoid, and that is that total exhaustion point that someone is going to reach during a long run, and particularly a marathon. What I have found is that the wall tends to be within a mile or so of your longest long run within the last 3-4 weeks. So if you're training for a marathon, I'm going to recommend going up to at least 26 miles. And in fact, when I've studied and done surveys on people that used to run 20 miles and then followed our program of going up 26, the average improvement has been 15 minutes faster with the 26-mile training run. The amazing thing, though, is that among those that want to improve time, I have always recommended going to 29 or 30 miles as the longest run 4 weeks before marathon itself. And when people go from a 26-miler up to a 29-miler, only 3 more miles, the average improvement is more than 11 minutes in surveys. It's a huge return on investment.
All right, right. We talked a little bit about the pace of the long run. Tell me a little bit about the pace of the walking break.
Well, it's crucial to slow down and to take the walk breaks that are directly attached to the pace per mile, and we can get into that separately if you want to in terms of the walk breaks. But pacing-wise, I mentioned at least 2 minutes per mile slower
right
than is currently predicted in a marathon, adjusted for temperature. And what that means is most of the people I've worked with have lived in the southern portion of the United States and have trained during the warm weather months. So I've done a lot of tabulations on how much people slow down when they, as the temperature increases, and have come up with a rule of thumb that's worked extremely well, and that is for every 5 degrees of temperature increase above 60, slow down 30 seconds per mile. That's both in long runs and in the marathon itself. So that means by 70 degrees, you should add another minute to what your pace would be on the long runs. And at 80 degrees, another minute. That lowers the chance dramatically of having heat-related problems and also extreme fatigue that you just don't recover from after long runs.
Right. I've heard you say that something along the effect that a 20-mile a 20-mile run with walk breaks is the same as a 20-mile run without walk breaks, just faster recovery. Easier.
Yes, and just to get to the pace a little bit, I was at a race 2 years ago in Albany, Georgia, in which an elite Kenyan athlete who usually runs about 5 minutes per mile in his marathons. So I asked him, what pace did he run on his long runs? And he said, I'll give you an example. 4 weeks before, 3 to 4 weeks before he wants to run an all-out marathon, he'll do his last long run, which is a 28-miler, and he'll run no faster than 4 hours. If you crunch the numbers, that's 8:30 per mile. So here's a young Kenyan running 3.5 minutes per mile. That was what I was seeing back in the days when I was competitive at the world-class level. I got to know a number of Kenyans, and they would start, almost every one of them would start their long runs at 10 minutes per mile, and I very seldom found them running any faster than 9 minutes per mile. And these were also people that ran 5 minutes per mile in their races. What's going on is if you slow down dramatically, you significantly reduce the wear and tear and are able to recover extremely fast. So this is a dirty little secret that the Kenyans know, and now you do. But the other aspect of this is that I have interviewed additionally more than 20, actually about 23 now, elite Kenyan marathoners. And over 70% of them run between 3 and 4 minutes per mile slower than they run in on their long runs than they run in their races. So they're slowing down even more than 2 minutes, significantly more. Now, the walk break issue, yes, you get the same benefit in endurance based on the number of miles you covered, regardless of how frequently you walk. I've had a number of eCoach clients that came to me injured. They had tried another program, gotten injured, and yet had already paid their non-refundable ticket to this given marathon, and I was their only hope, it seemed, to make good on their investment. So I interviewed them and found that the injuries were so significant that they really shouldn't be running. So I set up the training program for them and had them walk every day. And they didn't like that, but they right. did it. One guy walked a 15-miler, an 18-miler, and a 21-miler. Wow. He didn't run a bit in any of those, but because he did those walking long ones, he recovered from his injury and was able to resume training, doing his run walks for a 24-miler or 27-miler, resumed speed work, and in his marathon came within a very few minutes of doing what had been predicted at the beginning of his program. So this isn't an isolated case. It shows that even if you were forced to walk only, you will get the endurance based on the distance that you cover.
So it seems to be just very, very important just to train your body or get it used to being on it on your feet for 4 or 5 hours or whatever.
Well, it's not the hours, it's the distance.
Okay.
Because obviously, if you're training for a marathon and you get out there for 4 or 5 hours, whatever the time is, you can cover a lot less distance than 20. And in fact, that is the problem because people will get into a time crunch and they won't be able to get in the full distance, but they tell themselves, well, I ran the same number of hours that I'm going to be running the marathon. If you covered 20 miles in that time, then that's where you're going to tend to hit the wall. Mm-hmm. So you really do need to give yourself the benefit of the best preparation by going the distance or farther than the distance that you want to run in a race.
So now I'm trying to think through this thing logically. I've read your book. I have digested everything that we've talked about here and everything that's in the book. So I guess the next natural question, or I've also now picked a schedule out, and I guess the next natural question would be, so now what? So what I thought, and we talked a little bit earlier about how we're all very visual. What I thought might be a kind of a neat idea is just to have our listeners just reach out there and look around for a marathon sometime in the fall and pick a date.
Sure.
Might not even be the marathon they're going to run, but pick one that might be appealing to them. Sit down with a calendar, look at the schedule from your book, and then work backwards and see where they're at, like right now, and see. I mean, even if you think what you've read and heard so far might work, there's no downside to putting it down on a calendar and seeing what it looks like, at least at this point.
Yes, and actually the best book of mine that puts all of it together is called Year Round Plan. It has a grid pattern before the training schedule start so that you can look at 52 weeks in advance. It has all of the weekends scheduled, so you would count back from the marathon the number of weeks that you had. And you can see which week number you're talking about. Go right over to the schedules, and then in the book it tells you what to do each day of that week.
Oh, that's great. That's called Year Round Plan?
Yes.
Okay, I will put a link in the show notes so that people can get to that rather easily. So I guess the question then becomes, you've done over 150 marathons. You must have some sort of advice for people who want to go out and pick a marathon, let's say a first-time marathon.
Yeah, I have had great results, both myself and my e-coach clients and our Galloway training program folks, with using marathonguide.com. The greatest benefit there are the runner reviews, which I have found to be quite honest and quite good at giving you a picture of what really goes on at these events.
Great. Do you have any advice as far as if it's a first one, whether you ought to pick, it's good to pick like a really big one with a lot of crowd support or a smaller one where you may get a little bit more volunteer support?
It's a personal issue. A lot of folks want to go to the big cities and see the big crowds out there. There are quite a few others that don't like crowds and don't like the slowdown that occurs when you're in a huge crowd. The trade-off is that if you find a smaller marathon, there are usually places on the course where there aren't a whole lot of people. A good combination out there of having spectators along the way, beautiful course, is the Breast Cancer Marathon in Jacksonville, Florida in February. It's a fun weekend, goes along Jacksonville Beach, but the number of marathoners is only about 3,000 to 4,000. So it spreads out, and you still have crowd pretty much the whole way cheering you on. Beautiful course, and yet it's not super crowded. Other first-time marathons that are quite popular, the Marine Corps Marathon, and, of course, the Marines do such a great job with that event. The Portland Marathon, that's another year-to-year, 70% of the folks are first-time marathoners.
Whoa.
And there's a reason for that. They take good care of first-time marathoners
yeah.
at Portland as well as Marine Corps. So picking a course that's not super demanding is a good idea. If you had the opportunity to have friends that are going to go to that event, that's motivational. And particularly if they run at the same pace you do and do the
right.
same run-walk-run ratio, it's ideal to have a group. We have Galloway groups in a number of these big cities where there are big marathons, and sometimes we can match people up with the appropriate pace that they want because of our people in that city.
Yeah, I noticed that on your website. I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well so people can see if there's one anywhere close to where there's, I forget the number, 80 cities or something like that?
Yeah, 81 cities.
Yeah, amazing. Let me get to the part of the interview that I'm going to call listener questions. Like I said, I've gotten an amazing feedback from a lot of listeners, whether it's tweets, Facebook. I've gotten some calls into to my hotline, but I picked just three brief ones, if I could, of people who are absolutely jumping in with both feet. They have ordered the book. In one case, the gal even ordered your the video. And also went over to, I'm going to get this wrong, but motiontrax.com maybe?
Yes.
T-R-A-X-X, I think, right?
Right.
And downloaded a new podcast that you're involved in that, and it's free, and I'll put that in the show notes as well, but it's a 30-minute workout where you listen to music and you coach through the 30 minutes, true?
Yes, that's true. And then I also am involved with the Keychain Trainer, which people can access just from going to my website. And that allows you to download a whole host of workouts, your choice, every day.
And then throw it on your iPod, right? Is that your
MP3
right. player? Oh,
that's
great.
Right.
Three brief questions. Eve is a Twitter buddy of mine. She's a marathoner, and she's also an attorney, Jeff, so she'll probably hold you to this. If you want to plead the fifth, that's okay. She asks that she says she's looking at her schedule, and it calls for a five-mile magic mile. And she wants to know, does that mean you're going to run, walk 5 miles and then do a magic mile, or what does that mean?
Yeah, spoken like a true lawyer. One... pull the details.
Exactly.
Good. That's just nothing but positive, because a lot of people ask that question, and a lot of folks are afraid to ask that question. So the answer is that the total mileage for that day would be, in this case, 5 miles, whatever that total is listed on the schedule, and somewhere in there you would place a magic mile. But you can count the warm-up, the warm-down, any drills that you do to further warm yourself up, like the acceleration gliders, and all of it counts towards that 5 miles for that day.
Great. Adam, another buddy, he does his own podcast called Burning 2010, and he's jumped in, and in fact has already entered the Marine Corps, as you mentioned. This is going to be his first marathon.
Oh, right.
And he recently did a 10K where he used the method for the first time, and he'd like to know, where does he position himself within the race, and so that, you know, he's going to be stopping and starting, and he doesn't want to disrupt the race in anywhere, and he found himself having to weave in and out of the crowd every now and then.
Well, yeah, I understand that completely. The bottom line with placement is to be at one side of the road or the other in order to not get in anybody's way when you take walk breaks. That is an important thing that I do want to mention. There are a lot of folks that criticize walk break takers for being in the middle of the road. So you just avoid all that by being on one side of the road or the other. Now, I will say that in our defense, that most of the people who are taking walk breaks after the second half, in the second half, rather, of most marathons are ones that did not take the walk breaks early. They're just spent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Had they taken the walk breaks early, they wouldn't be spent, wouldn't have to have those prolonged walk breaks. But do get over to one side or the other, and if you have a time goal, most of the races will have banners at the start that allow you to sort yourself according to what pace per mile or what final time you want to get.
Great. And lastly, Cindy, she's a listener to the podcast. She's a little bit confused about the magic mile, and maybe she's focusing on it a little too much, but she'd like to know how much effort that she should be putting into it. She mentions she can run anywhere from an 8:30 all the way up to a 12-minute mile, depending on exactly how she feels. So, and obviously, 8-minute miles is going to take a lot more effort than a 12-minute, but how does she gauge how much effort to put into that magic mile?
The first one should not be hard at all. It should just be about the pace that you would run on maybe a little bit more brisk run that you, when you're feeling good, but not a hard pace at all. After that, you've gotten a time, because you're timing yourself. So the mission is to beat that time. And on each successive magic mile, you keep working on pacing yourself lap by lap in order to accomplish that goal of running faster progressively.
Well, perfect. It sounds like we've all got a lot of homework to do between now and the next time we talk. I've got a lot of topics I want to get into later on. I want to know a little bit more about changing our schedule as we go along based on the magic mile. I want to talk a little bit about how and what we should eat on our long runs and a lot more questions from our listeners.
Super.
We can get into that later on. And once again, the website everybody needs to check out is jeffgalloway.com.
Right.
And I'm going to add quite a few links of all the things we talked about in today's show.
Super.
And I want to thank you again. And next time we'll catch up on the Big Sur.
Yeah, we'll have I'll have some updates on that, and I look forward to telling a few more stories, too.
Great. Thanks very much for your time again, Jeff.
Well, great to talk, Kevin, and you keep up your good running, and I look forward to hearing of your progress.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jeff. Have a good one.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
There you go, episode 2 of the Extra Mile Podcast Experiment. I gotta tell you, I find myself so looking forward to my talks with Jeff. He and I exchange email as well, but he is so one of us. He's just so down to earth and willing to answer anything I ask him. So I encourage you, send me your questions for Jeff. Jeff mentions a few things in his interview today, a book, a website about finding a marathon, one of his training downloads, several things. So please get over to the website and check out the show notes for all of that good stuff. It all goes into part of your homework, by the way. Speaking of homework, what is it? Well, here you go. By now, as I said with my talk with Jeff, hopefully you've got a much better idea of what this plan is. You also have a way of looking at his website or in his book and picking a specific schedule based on your goal. So, in addition, you've also got a way of figuring out what might be a good marathon for the fall. Or half marathon. So I encourage you to go to marathonguide.com and look around. Pick something in the fall time frame that sounds interesting, sounds fun, sounds like something you might be able to do. Then grab a calendar, start with the date of that marathon, take the schedule, and just start throwing notes on it. Work backwards using Jeff's schedule and see where you are when you get to today. Compare that with your current base. I mean, chances are we've done this so far in advance, your base is going to be far more than Jeff's schedule calls for. In other words, let me use myself as an example. I'm currently running my long runs at about 9 miles. When I put my schedule down that Jeff has set me, and I'm sitting at late April right now, my long runs are only 6 miles right now. So I've got a long time. So basically, I'm just keeping my base going until the schedule catches up to where I'm at. But my point is, it will give you so much more information on whether or not this is something you can really do. And there's no downside. I'm just a very visual person and think it helps a lot to look at what we're talking about. So that's your homework. Pick a schedule, pick a marathon, and put it on the calendar. Let's see where you're at. Also, I want to mention that for those of you who use... Yeah, front or back?
Back.
You got plenty. Yeah, you might want to come back by maybe about this far. And then just, no, and then just stop. You're good on this side.
I'm leaving.
Oh, you're leaving. Oh, you got a long way. You got like this. Yeah, come on. I promise. I'll pay your damages. You still got like, there you go.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Sorry.
No problem. Look at that. A topic for a future show. Learning to parallel park. What the heck was I talking about? Oh yeah, Buckeye Outdoors. Do you use that? If so, I have created a challenge. Challenge is really the wrong term, but that's what it's—that's what they use at the website. And just called it the Extra Mile Podcast Experiment. And if you use it, or care to, please go out and check it out and join. It's just a way for those of us who have committed to a marathon in the fall to follow each other, check out what our current training is like, how it's going, can also send messages back and forth, banter they call it. Anyway, you might want to check that out. It officially kicks off on May the 1st. Also, don't forget, send me your questions for Jeff, your concerns, experiences with the method. I'm dying to hear from you. And we'll put that in our next episode. Don't forget the website, www.theextramilepodcast.com. And if you're so inclined, call the hotline. That number is area code 206-339-6497. And until next time, you'll enjoy your extra mile.